Last time I was interviewed, I made a number of predictions. This is before the last election. And I predicted that Joe Biden would win the popular vote between 5 and 10 million. He won it by 7. I predicted that the three key states were Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. But I said, watch Georgia. That could flip. Mm-hmm. That turned out. And I said that before the end of Trump's term, over 500,000 people will perish by COVID. So I was on the mark.
That was the voice of Dr. Bill Baarsma, who served as the 37th mayor of Tacoma from 2001 to 2009. He knows what he is talking about. He is an astute observer and participant in government. He has a doctorate in public administration, and his dissertation was A Study of Dissension and Conflict Over Council-Manager Government in Tacoma, Washington. Prior to his election as mayor, Baarsma taught political science, business, and public administration at the University of Puget Sound and served on the Tacoma City Council from 1992 to 1999. He is now retired but volunteers at the Tacoma Historical Society, where he serves as president. This conversation will be in two parts. In this first part, he will talk about his campaign for mayor and how campaigning has changed since he first ran for city council in 1991. Part two will talk about who really runs the government in Tacoma. This is Louisa Beal with Radio Tacoma, and I'm here with Bill Baarsma at the Tacoma Historical Society. If you're not familiar with the Tacoma Historical Society, and even if you are, they've recently moved to 406 Tacoma Avenue South. We'll talk about the place and the venue later, but right now I'm eager to talk with Bill, former city council member and former Tacoma mayor.
Correct.
Hi, Bill.
Hello. Good to see you.
Yes. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
So there's just so many things, and so I'm trying to make sense of everything. But let's kind of start. Since this is a historical society, let's start with history. Now, when you ran for mayor, what triggered your decisions?
There was one event that kind of triggered my thinking in that regard, which I still remember vividly, by the way. It's really in my mind. So I had ended my two terms on the city council. I was term limited out. And while I was on the council, it was a part-time position, and I taught at the University of Puget Sound full-time. Back then, the salaries were $18,000 a year, not $40,000, as they are now, and which I thought that was great because I was a part-time person and fully employed. It was a nice match for me. The students were interested. I was teaching government courses at UPS and actually practicing government, so it was a nice match. And so when I checked out and at the end of the year, 1999, I wasn't thinking about running for mayor at the time, candidly. I was thinking about the possibility of finally being promoted to full professor. I'd engaged in some political activities on campus that did not put me in good stead with an administration, but it was a new administration. And I had hit some goals, some markers academically. And so I was actually promoted to full professor, which increased my salary from associate by about $20,000 a year, which was a big jump. And so my game plan was to continue on at the university on a full-time basis as a full professor and with all of the other aspects that go along with that. And so it turns out that, and I don't remember exactly when this was. It might have been latter part of 2000. I'm not quite sure, or first part of 2000, maybe January of 2000, or maybe the end of 99. I'm not sure which, but I was out walking my dog. And I remember this vividly. It was in the evening. Kirby, my dog, I was walking down 37th, North 37th, right off Madison, starting my walk, and this car swung around and stopped. And I was wondering, who is this person? You know, this car stopped here, and I'm here with my dog. I said, what is this all about? And the person leaned over, and the door opened, and the light went on, and it was former Mayor Brian Ebersole, who I had served with. He was the mayor when I was on a council. And he said, Bill, I want to talk to you. And I said, okay, what? He said, you should run for mayor. And I said, well, hey, Brian, I haven't even thought about running for mayor. Mm-hmm. I said, number one. Number two, I said, look, I've got some, you know, promising career possibilities here at UPS. And, you know, I don't think so. He said, call me. Let's talk about it. You know, I think you should run for mayor. And that actually got me thinking. And so I called him and a day or so later, and he said, you know, I talked about, you know, being full professor. And he said, look, he said, I'll bet we've got a better medical plan for you, the city does, than the university does. And, and he said, you know, there's a retirement potential here. And I said, furthermore, he said, you got an automatic cost of living increase, 2.75 each and every year, number one.
So he was competing with UPS for you.
Yeah, well, he was actually the president of Bates Technical College. He was not mayor. He had resigned that position, as you may remember. And he just saw me, and it popped into his head. This is not unusual for Brian. This is kind of the way he thinks. Things pop into his head that kind of seem to be great. And he, as he saw me with the dog, I don't think he'd been thinking about it. I don't think it was something – he didn't call me and ask me. I think it was just something that popped into his head. And so I called him, and, you know, he talked about the automatic cost of living, which I was aware of. And he said, you know, you got a car allowance, and you got automatic increase there, and you've got other – and you got this retirement potential, and you got – you know, I'll bet you've got better medical. And there were a lot of things that I had been involved with as a council member that remained – that still remained out there, that had been unfinished, that I was keenly interested in. Historic preservation, there were some projects there, the bridge, Murray Morgan Bridge, Albers Mill. So I was really into that. There was the cleanup of the Foss Waterway. I was a council member when that all started. There was the potentially new stadium and keeping AAA ball in Tacoma. I was interested in that. You know, neighborhoods and neighborhood councils and strengthening neighborhoods. I was interested in that. Environmental issues was a great number right up there on my agenda. Social justice issues were also important. So there are a lot of things that were important to me. They were part of my 8 years as a council member. So it really got me thinking about it. It also turns out that the timing was pretty good because I was I had a sabbatical, which meant that, you know, I could – if I decided to make this leap, I could devote more time to a campaign. So I talked to the dean of the School of Business and Public Administration where I was working and chatted with him and my other – and faculty colleagues. And they all said, you know, this is an opportunity. Go for it. And would you be willing to come back and continue to teach on a part-time basis as a mayor? And I said, I think we can work that out. I would like to, you know, see about making that happen. So all of those factors kind of came together. And then, of course, I had to think about putting together a campaign for mayor. And things had changed since I first ran for office in 1991, obviously. And this was an open seat. The incumbent, Mike Crowley, who had been deputy mayor and had taken Ebersol's place when Brian resigned. He couldn't run because he was term limited, so it was a vacant seat. So that also was – I didn't have to go against an incumbent. And I figured that I could put together a coalition of support of my union friends and people in labor, people in the environmental movement, people in the neighborhoods that I had worked with. People in the historic preservation folks and people that had always seen me as kind of an independent person that was willing to question authority to ask questions and not the rubber stamp proposals. That, I think, was something that people were interested in supporting me, or in fact, in supporting me. So, you know, I made the big decision to go, and that was a big decision. I found myself running against two very formidable foes, longtime friends, people that I'd supported in the past. Mm-hmm. One was Harold Moss. Oh. I'd reach out to Harold and ask him for his support, and I could see that he was kind of sitting back. Now, interestingly enough, later on, Brian was with a group of people that talked Harold into running, actually, against me. You know, what do I say? Politics is the art of the possible. Anyway.
So was this before Harold Moss was mayor?
Harold was on the county council at the time, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and was highly regarded, had run unopposed for re-election. And the other candidate was Port Commissioner Claire Petridge, mm-hmm. also a very formidable mm-hmm. foe. So, mm-hmm. so and you know, there are people out there that did not want me as mayor, which is fine. I understand that for a lot of reasons. And they were looking for someone, someone or a number of candidates that could essentially take me out in the primary. Mm-hmm. And they would have essentially two people they could support in the general. So there were people that, you know, in the business community and others that were rallying support behind Claire and Harold as we were moving forward. Claire had just been reelected as well as commissioner. I had not been on the ballot since 1995, and I was running against two people who had just run for reelection.
And again, what year was this?
Well, this was, you know, the election was in 2001, in November of 2001. So, you know, you had to gear up. Mm-hmm. In January of 2000. And I think it was around that time that I had my fateful meeting with, conversation with Brian Ebersole. And so, you know, the first thing I did was I wanted to round up support from my friends in labor. And so I reached out to the Firefighters Union, Local 30, and Pat McGilligott was a friend. And I always had an open door with my friends in labor. I hadn't always agreed with their position. Sometimes I vehemently disagreed with their position, but I always had an open door, and we could reason together. And so I reached out to him, and I reached out to my friends in IBW 483, which is the largest union of city employees, and was able to secure their support early on. Rick Height, who was the business manager of 483, and Pat McGilligott were friends of mine. So that was important. I needed to get kind of a base. I needed to get secure support and start raising money so I could be a viable candidate. You have to establish viability, or you're not going to be in the game, so to speak. And then, of course, the question was who would manage my campaign or who would direct my campaign. One of my former students called me and suggested that I hire Kathy Allen out of Seattle to be my campaign consultant. And it turned out that Kathy was a little too rich for my blood, you know. In Seattle right now, I was noticing many candidates for Seattle mayor raised well over, some of them raised over $200,000. So I was a little rich. I met with her and actually paid her $5,000. Like, you know, kind of as an advance mm-hmm. to have conversation. And and she helped me initially, gave me some suggestions and ideas that helped. But I couldn't continue on and think about raising $100,000 just to pay her for her advice. So that was that. And then I had to find a campaign manager. I finally did. And a treasurer who was, turns out, was the spouse of a colleague of mine at UPS. And then I worked out an arrangement with UPS. So I was off the races.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And the rest is history. Actually, I finished, it turns out I did finish first in the primary.
Uh-huh. And who was your opponent?
Harold. Harold was the one that, I got about 35%. Harold got about 32%. Mm-hmm. Claire got about 23%. You know, her campaign really didn't, she just really didn't catch on. Mm-hmm. The campaign mm-hmm. didn't have symmetry to it. The message just wasn't there. Even though she was a woman candidate and mm-hmm. someone who'd been very – and with a great name, it just didn't generate the support. And so she finished third with about 25%, and then there were a number of other candidates that got the remaining percentage. They were kind of, you know, mm-hmm. minor candidates that were out there that we had to deal with in the debates, which is always interesting. So I ended up with running against Harold. And, I just knocked on a lot of doors until 9/11, and that kind of stopped everything for a while.
Yeah, it kind of did.
Yeah, sure did.
So it sounds like with the campaign, basically you were looking for people and then money to pay those people. Is that what I understand?
Well, yeah. You know, of course, campaign is very expensive. Yeah. I mean, not more so now than it was then. Things now are quite different than mm-hmm. it was even then.
We'll we can talk about that in a minute.
Yes,
you know, so where was your money going?
Well, first thing, I had raised the money, and one of my goals was to get at least 100 people willing to put in $100. Mm-hmm. And then they get labor support mm-hmm. And other organizational support. And then I had to hire a campaign manager, and that was a $15,000 advance to bring this person on board, as a local person. And then, of course, cost money for mail and direct mail. I had a lot of volunteer supports. Local 30 was in for big and volunteering and helping me with doorbelling and putting signs together and putting signs up and so on. So I had to raise money to pay. My campaign office was donated. It was an in-kind donation. Of course, all of this was on my public disclosure forms. Someone that I had met during my council days had a commercial building, and there was a vacancy there, and I reached out to him to get some campaign money. He actually sent me $1,000, but also donated his commercial establishment for my campaign headquarters.
Wow.
So that was helpful. But that was a six-figure campaign, and I put a lot of money, of my own money and Carol's money, to be in the game.
Sure.
But yeah, that was a six-figure campaign, and Harold was pretty close to that as well.
Mm-hmm. So. Talk about money in politics.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't hear this much anymore, but, you know, I heard it particularly in the Bush-Gore campaign, where they were talking about the war chest. Mm-hmm. Well, they got so much money in their war chest, so they're going to win, you know, and that always kind of bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
So how has campaigning changed then?
Yeah, we can talk about, you know, you know, you have to raise money to be in the game.
Sure.
It's tough. Yeah. That's why there are very few viable candidates running right now for Tacoma, for the mayor, and councilmembers. We'll talk about that. But one of the big changes, back when I ran in 91,
Was for the council?
Yeah, the first time. You know, I had my campaign kickoff on my birthday, April 18th, and I had a lot of friends show up and made contributions. I raised about probably $15,000 to $20,000, and I had a few other campaign events. My campaign manager was a former student of mine that volunteered, and the deal was, I said to him, you know, if I have any money left over in the campaign, all said and done, I'd like to, you know, give you an honorarium, and that was kind of an agreement. And he was a retired military guy. Good friend. He and his spouse were very helpful. I went out and knocked on doors. My big goal in 91 was to make sure there was only one seat, open seat, Jack Warnick. He was term limited. He was the only one, very unusual. And I knew there were five people out there vying for it. And so I went out, worked very hard to talk them out of running against me, and I was successful in so doing. And the only real technology were the walking lists, you could get walking lists that you could go out into a precinct, and when you knocked on the door, you knew if that was an active voter or not. Mm-hmm. You know how active, you didn't know how they voted, but
sure,
you knew how
sure.
active they were.
Oh, okay.
And the active voters were important because in local elections, turnouts are low. And I really didn't have a viable opponent, but I went out and knocked on doors anyway. But it was fairly straightforward. You know, people contributed money. There was really no limit on campaign for local elections. Mm-hmm. But probably my biggest contribution might have been $1,000. It was a lot of retail, knocking on doors and meeting people and such. And I was very successful. You know, I got about 80% of the vote, and I was very successful and ran for reelection in 95, and it was pretty much the same then, although Ebersol was running for mayor, he's former Speaker of the House. There was a different dynamic there. Big name running for mayor. You know, the idea of, is he pushing for a strong mayor system was kind of the whisper. Elections now, and then when I ran for mayor, elections now have changed dramatically. It's an unreported story how dramatic elections have changed, kind of as a manifestation of Citizens United, because now you have these political action committees. We didn't have them back when I was running. Mm-hmm. First, there was no limit on what person could contribute, number one, or how many times they can contribute. Now there's a limit. So what we're seeing now is that people who are involved in campaigns are limited, $1,000, $2,000, but they put in $10,000-$15,000 into these political action committees. And the political action committees are supposedly independent, but they're, you know, of other campaigns, so the candidate really doesn't know what's going on. But when you get a piece of literature from one of these political action committees, it looks like it comes from the candidate. You cannot distinguish the difference. You have to read the fine print to see where your campaign piece is coming from. So you have these political action committees, one established by the local chamber, had not been local chambers headed by someone who came from the Olympia political environment. Smart guy politically. They established, it's not their committee, but people engage with the Chamber of Commerce, contribute money, over $100,000, $200,000 into this political action committee that then essentially supports certain campaigns. And then you have political action committees that, this, by the way, is a PAC that is ongoing, and you can follow it. And it has kind of an interesting, like, Citizens for Greater Tacoma, names like that. Yeah. You know, those are the names that you see.
That's just wonderful. Yeah.
And then you have
World for a Greater Tacoma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you have a political action committees that are established for one purpose only, and that is to defeat a candidate. Mm. And they saw this in the mayor's race. Political action committees were established, particularly directed toward Jim Merritt, the architect, who went down to defeat. Overnight, boom, 60, 70,000 hit pieces go out. You don't know essentially where they're coming from. They're not from Victoria Woodard's campaign. She doesn't know anything about them, but they come, making my point. So this was not the case when I ran for council or mayor. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was far more straightforward. You know, you knew who was supporting the candidate. You knew how much money they raised. You know who contributed. Sometimes, I did get a $5,000 contribution from into my campaign from the police union, Local 6. Harold got a $5,000 check from George Russell to help with a hit piece directed toward me, which he regretted. But at least you knew, you know, who was contributing and where the money went. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now you have hundreds of thousands of dollars that go into these political action committees, some ongoing, some established for one purpose only, to either defeat a particular candidate or candidates or elect particular candidates. So although, you might say, well, the mayor... Mayor Woodard's raised, $300,000 in the last go around. A competitor, and Jim Merritt raised, close to $200,000. There was an additional hundreds of thousands of dollars that came from the outside into those races, and the council races. One interesting thing is, but in the 5th Councilmanic District in Tacoma South End, there was an ongoing race between Chris Beal, who's a liberal, and his opponent, who was a business conservative. And that was a $50,000 campaign and a turnout of maybe 5,000, 6,000 votes. Huge amounts of money going, and the district races that are competitive, where the stakes are high. And this is unreported. I've urged the local press to kind of look into this, mm-hmm. because this is all new. You know, we haven't seen this before until, fairly recently. And it's, as they say, a manifestation of Citizens United.
Yeah.
And what we see
so
now.
So Citizens United, just to kind of explain a little bit,
yeah.
from what I understand, I mean, and this is simplifying it, is that, corporations are people so that they have free speech, and the way they have free speech is with money.
Right. And it essentially created the environment that led to what we see now. Mm-hmm. So, I won't mention name. I'm so-and-so. I'm Joe Doakes. And under other circumstances, I would have contributed to candidate $5,000 or maybe even $10,000. Mm-hmm. But at least people would know that I'm contributing to candidate A for $5,000 or $10,000. But now the law is, state law is, I can't contribute that. I can contribute maybe $1,000, mm-hmm. and my spouse can contribute $1,000 or $2,000. And my spouse can contribute $2,000 to whoever. But now I can kick in $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, whatever I want, into a political action committee that will send out pieces that look like they come from a campaign.
So is there a way for people, I say people, but, people who vote, I mean, it's different than just people, but to really find out where these things are coming from and what their stances are and what's behind all this?
For the person who's really clued in, I mean, really, focused on mm-hmm. what's going on. Yeah. I mean, you can do research mm-hmm. and find out, First, you have to have on the campaign piece, who essentially what organization or who mm-hmm. is sending it out. That's required. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that hasn't been done, and there have been huge fines levied, not in Tacoma as mm-hmm. of yet, mm-hmm. but other communities. You see this, of course, big time in legislative races that are off the charts, you know, million-dollar campaigns in legislative districts. But now we're seeing it in Tacoma politics, and huge change over what I experienced mm-hmm. in the 90s and when I ran for mayor mm-hmm. from 2001 to 2009, I was sworn in 2002 and served to the end of 2009. And my reelection, I ran against, that's the other thing. We have term limits mm-hmm. in Tacoma. So generally speaking, the incumbent has a push. Mm-hmm. So because people are waiting, generally they wait for the open seat. Yeah. But even now, and we can talk about current situation, even now with open seats, you have very few candidates and very few contested races in Tacoma. Mm-hmm. And right now it's important because everything's earlier now. You know, mm-hmm. you have the primaries in the summer. Back when I was running, the primaries were in September, mm-hmm. and you filed in July, in June and July, and so you had a longer period to raise money and to get your act together. And people mm-hmm. were a little more tuned in September than they are in the sleepy days of August. So you have a lower turnout potential than you would in September, where people begin to pay attention.
Right.
So you know what you got to do now is you got to raise a lot of money. For direct mail and make sure you connect with the active voters in the summer because people still vote even though in the sleepy days there are still 5-5s, the perfect voters, and those are the ones you, and the 4-5s. Mm-hmm. Like when I say 4-5s, but those are gold. Yeah, five out of the last five elections, mm-hmm. four times out of the last five elections. Mm-hmm. You have to really make sure that you reach out and hit them through direct mail mm-hmm. and, prior to those that sleepy summer primary.
Mm-hmm. Again, this whole thing about the money in politics, yeah. you know, really disturbs me. And
for good reason.
Yeah. And is there a way out of this?
Well, you have up north in Seattle, of course, they have these vouchers. It's public financing of campaigns. Mm-hmm. So you can establish your viability and get funding for your campaign mm-hmm. and be have a competitive race. Mm-hmm. Here we don't have that. So it's all what you can raise.
Is that on the horizon nationally?
No, not with the current situation. No.
Yeah, yeah.
It was at one time, maybe mm-hmm. back when in his first few years when Democrats controlled both the House and the Senate by mm-hmm. big margins. Mm-hmm. But he threw everything into his Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that led to the end of the Democrats mm-hmm. Controlling Congress. And
so starting locally.
It'd be nice if we had them, but I don't see it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, why would the incumbents be interested? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, why would they? And
sure.
You have now a situation sure. where incumbents, for all intents and purposes, run unopposed.
Mm-hmm.
So why would they want to yeah. have a system that would generate a viable opponent?
Right.
You know, the mayor right now, the incumbent mayor, could be the third time in history. And I predict it will be the third time in history that the incumbent mayor of Tacoma is running unopposed. And the first time that happened was the very first mayor back in 1883, John Sprague, Brigadier General, uh-huh. war hero. He ran unopposed for a short term. Uh-huh. And then essentially I ran against Will Baker, the late Will Baker. I was unopposed.
Uh-huh.
I had someone on the ballot, so that kept me honest. Uh-huh. But Marilyn Strickland had no opponent.
Yeah.
And I don't think now that the mayor's raised over $60,000, I don't see her having.
Wow. So things that we need to, I mean, say we as citizens need to know is how to research the PACs.
Right.
Okay. And understanding where the money's coming from.
Right. And you know, that's you can find that. There's a lag in time, but you can find that through the Public Disclosure Commission. That's where you find it. And you find out who's contributed. Mm-hmm. You find out, you know, if you're aware of what's going on now, mm-hmm. you know, for the layperson, it's difficult. You have to know where to look. And, you know, sometimes it's difficult for me, to essentially identify what these groups are.
Mm-hmm.
You've got ongoing PACs and one-time PACs, and you got a whole now that we're PAC-driven, You've got, you know, pages and pages of political action committees with odd names, mm-hmm. like Citizens for Greater Washington or Citizens for Livable Such and Such and so on.
Yeah.
And they, and their name has nothing to do with their goal.
Yeah.
In fact, it may have exactly the opposite. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Citizens for a Cleaner Washington might be supported by the dirtiest industries out there.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, absolutely. Citizens for Unicorns and Rainbows.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you can, you know, if you really I know some people are really good at researching that information. It's there. Mm-hmm. The newspaper has not spent any time or interest in it. I've urged them to, because I think it's a great story.
Oh,
but, but they, you know, what happened? There was one one episode in the last campaign, the Gaspan campaign for mayor, involving one group that sent out a piece involving Mayor Woodard's lack of an Associate of Art degree from Pierce College. She was claiming a degree on one of her resumes. And that group was really, there was a broadside against that group. And the News Tribune essentially did cover that. But all this other money out there is just...
Well, when campaign season rolls around again, I might contact you for the names of those people who know what to do.
Sure.
Because I would love to get a radio series throughout the campaign.
Right. I can give you that. Afterwards, I'll give you a name of a person who really, really pays attention.
We can start now.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to talk about, that's for sure.
Thank you for joining us. We will continue this conversation in part two, and we'll discover who really runs the government in Tacoma.